You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, this is Charlotte Abate,
Emily Ballou,
and Samantha Omari Sendejas.
And this is Young, Scrappy, and Hungry. Welcome back, everyone.
We're here.
We are here. In this episode today, we will be talking about uncertainty. And in a time where there's so much influx of what is happening, we don't know, nobody knows. It's definitely on everyone's mind, that's for sure.
Yeah, and even like it's specific, we're even going to be talking specifically about like uncertainty with like accepting a job or like uncertainty with what to do next or like those types of just, I mean, there's uncertainty in everything. So we're just going to be covering it all in 20 minutes.
So let's head into act one. Resources.
Oh boy. All right, I will start. So the first, these are both sort of just articles that I came across in the past couple of months. The first is called How to Experience Art and Culture During Coronavirus. Obviously, this is something that we're all experiencing still and probably will be for, again, who knows how long, but definitely the next couple of months. And it's kind of impossible to like, not impossible, but obviously we can't be experiencing live theater right now. And so this is a great article on like ways to engage with art in different ways, just to like kind of keep that going. So you don't have to obviously like give it up altogether because that would suck. And then on the topic of like uncertainty with jobs specifically, my second resource is an article about like five do's and don'ts of accepting a job offer. Of course, we'll have all these linked in the episode description, so don't fret. But yeah, check those out. What about you, Emily?
This week, I have pulled some articles that I came across that I found might be helpful. The first one is from Playbill, actually, and it's about what everyone can learn from actors, mostly Broadway actors, about dealing with anxiety, uncertainty, and unemployment, the three nasty words. And in this article, psychotherapist and former Broadway dancer John Carroll is actually interviewed on how he is, you know, coping in the time of COVID-19, what he's doing, and sort of different advice for how to process instead of pushing through things and giving space to take a step back and recognize all the stresses that are going on, and then how to deal with that and how to deal with the, you know, constant cycle of anxiety, coping with the endless cycle of unemployment and no real light at the end of the tunnel, and just surviving all that stress and different outlets to do that with. The second resource that I found, I've actually been looking at for a few years now, Backstage, very well known among the acting and theater community, place for different audition postings. But in a time where there's not a lot of in-person theater, if at all, many different small theaters and other just different places for work are posting lots of remote and virtual work and auditions and that sort of thing. So there's still ways to get involved when, you know, we can't go into real theaters. And then I do have a very quick third resource, actually, that I check in quite a bit. Broadway.com's Broadway Buzz, they released a day-to-day schedule on different virtual screenings and interviews and events that are either performances or just have to do with theater. And there is so much always happening. There's so much coming up. And so it's a great, great sort of calendar to look at on what to engage with. And Samantha, what about you?
Awesome. All of those are great resources that we all really need. and take note of. So I actually found one resource where it's just like a full-on list of resources for artists and arts organizations, and it's from the National Endowment for the Arts. So they created a list with just COVID-19 resources, response, emergency funds, blogs that we can look into. So there's a couple from different orgs, initiatives, associations, such as Americans for the Arts, the National Assembly of State Arts Agencies for Freelance Artists, American Alliance of Museums. There's one for, I believe, for music. There's one with Billboard, Backstage, Chamber Music America. There you go. So many different places to be able to just see what could be done right now during COVID-19, and also how to pick back up with any different types of artistic happenings mm-hmm. that are going on and need to be done.
Yeah. Love a resource within a resource.
Right? Awesome. Again, we will be having all of these resources linked in the descriptions. But thank you so much.
Act two. Here we have Christian. Christian Mendez Aguirre is a theater maker and researcher based in Austin, Texas. He's a second-year PhD student in performance as a public practice in the Department of Theater and Dance at UT Austin, where he studies the relationship between contemporary American theatrical performance and the science of climate change. As a practitioner and teacher, Christian integrates current production processes, establishes equitable approaches to theater education and self-development. Recent directing credits include Everybody by Brandon Jacobs Jenkins and Mr. Burns, a post-electric play by Anne Washburn. His work as producer and director has garnered him and his collaborators a total of 10 nominations from the citywide B. Iden Payne Awards Council. Welcome, Christian.
Yay, welcome.
Welcome.
Hello. Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Yes, of course. Thank you so much again for your time and for being a part of this conversation today. First off, I want to ask how you're doing. How is everything going on for you right now? And also, I do want to give a congratulations to Christian for his recent nominations for his production of Everybody. Congratulations.
Congrats.
Yeah.
Thank you. I think things are going as well as they can. There's a project that I'm working on for February, and that's been like the main thing that I've been like stuck on today. Like, I haven't really made much progress, and I have a lot of feelings about not being able to make progress, but other than that, I think I'm okay. I'm healthy. I have access to COVID testing. I have internet where I am. I have food. I'm okay.
Awesome.
I'm okay.
Thankfully you do have those resources open to you. Thank you. And yes, we'll get a little bit more into any recent projects that you have coming up. But let's go ahead and start with this interview. So first off, let's get to know you a little bit more. So what made you decide to pursue an MFA and now a PhD in performance as a public practice? And what was the inspiration behind your research and study?
So I actually decided to go to graduate school for theater. And I also, at the same time, decided to sort of commit to theater because I wanted to learn how to collaborate. When I was an undergrad, I did a lot of activism, like environmental activism, with my friends and with my classmates in some pretty stressful spaces and scenarios. And I got really burnt out because I felt like we were trying to reclaim or like to demand countries like the US or like governments like the US governments to like respect other countries that have like less resources or less money or less ability to adapt to climate change and things like that. So we were asking them essentially to collaborate and to be mindful of each other and to value all life equally, all forms of life equally. And I felt like that wasn't really happening within the activist groups themselves. And to the point that I was an activist, but I was also an artist. And I often felt like my contributions were not necessarily not valued, but it wasn't clear to me exactly how they were important. So I decided to spend a lot of time and energy, especially making theater, because theater in theory is something that is a space where you ideally have to learn how to collaborate. Like, it's just part of it. Like, you cannot do it by yourself. And if you do, well, it shows. Versus there's other things that you can do by yourself. And so that kind of helped me decide to study and become a theater artist. And as you were saying, like, it definitely influenced what I considered my research. Like, the fall, the second year that I was at UT was the same fall that the Me Too movement broke out. And I don't remember, Sam, if this was, Samantha, if this was before your time, but there were some instances of, like, for lack of a better word, like, violence, like emotional and psychological violence in rehearsals at UT. Mm-hmm. And it was at the same time as the Me Too movement was happening. There wasn't sexual harassment to my knowledge, but I began to wonder, like, why is it that this thing that happens in Hollywood is also happening here in our classrooms? And if it's happening in the rehearsal rooms, like, how can we change it? Like, where does it come from? And that began like a 4 or 5 year long stretch into trying to figure out where those things come from. So the short answer is, like, I never really joined it because of the glamour of the stage. I've always just been like, or I became fascinated with what does it mean to collaborate well and what does it mean to exist as part of a community in an equitable and mindful way. And that kind of, I don't know, that got me through my MFA and that made me want to stay for my PhD as well. I don't know what I'm going to do afterwards, but those are the questions that I'm sitting with right now. That was a long-winded answer. I'm going to try to be more conversational, but
no, you're good.
No, awesome. I loved everything you just said right now. Yeah. Thank you so much for that.
I think that's so true. Like, theater is, it's basically impossible to do it without collaboration. And, like, that, I feel like that's so, like, cool that that's why you pursued this.
No, yeah, definitely. And I mean, best of luck with the rest of your research and studies in the program too. I'm so excited for all that you're going to do. Awesome. So then to move on to the next question, especially now focusing in on the theme, which you've already discussed about too, is like uncertainty of just like what to do, what can we do to bring our work in together, especially now during this time. So I do want to ask, what experience have you had where you had to sit down with yourself and really think and decide on what to do when there were questions about projects and job opportunities?
So you're basically asking me, like, how did I handle, like, not being sure about a project or a job opportunity?
Perfect.
Okay, I think there's a couple of things. Being able to be have some clarity as to why I do theater has helped me kind of navigate how to use my time. And so, and Samantha knows this perhaps more than the other wonderful co-hosts, but like that has resulted in me like self-producing a lot of my work. Not so much because I wanted to be like the center of the show, but because I felt like the questions that I wanted to answer for myself were harder to answer if someone else had like the institutional or like the creative purpose for the project, if that makes sense. And I also didn't always have like access to resources to produce, et cetera, et cetera. But so by the time that I began to be asked to collaborate with people or began to get offers to work on projects or to like both at UT, but also around the city, I think I began to ask, to sort of ask myself the questions like, why do I want to do this? And in some cases, it was because I wanted to not have to produce my own work. Like the last play that I directed at UT right before COVID hit was a show that was produced by the department. And I was like, great, like this will hopefully let me focus on only directing. And there was a lot of like a lot of things I learned in that process. But I think that was one of the things that I was weighing is sort of like, why exactly is it that I want to do this? And so sometimes, yeah, that was the answer. And then when it came to taking on projects outside of UT, I definitely felt like I wanted to do those because I feel like work that you produce by yourself isn't always seen as like equally valuable as when someone else produces something for you, or like you're working with quote unquote an established theater. So, you know, technically all the shows that I did at UT were not part of the departmental season, with the exception of this last one. Like, you know, there were things we kind of did on the sides. And I think I had a little bit of like a self-esteem issue with that for a while. I was like, is my work equally good if I'm the one making it happen? And so since COVID, I've kind of realized that that is BS, like, and that's a longer conversation, but there is a lot of value that can be found in producing and making your own work. But I think that was one of the kind of the drivers. By the time I began accepting like work outside of UT, that was one of the things that was like, yeah, I was just like, well, I want to establish myself in the field. I want to be recognized. I want to be seen. So that's why I'm accepting it. But both of those kind of purposes are really specific to my wanting to be a director or a dramaturg as opposed to being an actor, which is one of the reasons I have a lot of respect for actors and I could never be one, is because you really are given the reins of your time, your life, and in many cases, even your body and your mind to someone else's vision. And that's a lot of trust.
Yeah. For a lot of us, like in our undergraduate career, graduate career, or just anyone really trying to figure all of this out, we're just trying to ask ourselves so many questions of should, like the what ifs and the how to's. So thank you for that insight that you've had within your experiences.
And I would say, sorry, Sam, Samantha, I would also say that those what ifs and should I's are super valid because like, on the one hand, you know, we're told like, you know, take every opportunity that you can, like make the most of your training or your education. But sometimes that results in like us being burnt out and overstretched, which I have yet to meet a theater person that isn't burnt out or overstretched. But also, even when we're not, like not every experience in the theater is pleasant. And I think and we can harm ourselves or each other by learning how to collaborate because we're learning. And so I think some of those hesitations are super valid of just being like, should I work with this person? Like something didn't feel right last time, but should I do it again? Should I try it again?
I don't know. Yeah. I was going to say, I totally agree. And I think like being like learning to sit with on a certain level of uncertainty at any point, like, and be comfortable with it is so important, especially in theater. Like you don't need to always have the right answer or like any answer.
Yes. It's important and hard and exhausting and like all of those things.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. Now moving on into a little bit of what you discussed in the beginning about a certain project that you have coming up in February. What have you been working on during this interesting time and what projects do you have coming up? And if you could discuss a little bit about them.
Yeah, so there's this script that I have been in love with for like 5 years. It's called Hedda, actually no, 3 years. It's called Hedda Tron, like Hedda Gabler and Tron as in like a robot. Mm. And it is Hedda Gabler with robots, basically. And it's a script that I had been wanting to produce myself for a while, but you really do need to have something remotely close to a robot, and you need 5 of them. Oh, wow. And last year was the last year that I could pitch for the season at UT because after that, I wasn't sure that I was going to be on campus, et cetera, et cetera. So I pitched it and I 100% did not think they were going to accept it, but they did. They did. And so I found that in January. And then up through May, we were working on the designs for that show. But then as it became clear that, you know, the school year wasn't going to be what it was going to be, the designers actually asked me if, since we were going to have to pivot pretty significantly, they were like, well, is this the best, is Heratron, like a play about a white woman in Michigan who gets kidnapped by robots, is that the story we want to put our effort in right now, both in terms of COVID, but also the protests in the wake of the killing of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, mm-hmm. and Breonna Taylor. Mm-hmm. And so I was the last one. It was a team of 7 people, and I was the last one to agree to focus on something else because I was so attached to that script. And it felt like the outcome of so much work, like to try to, you know, earn the respect of the faculty and earn the respect of, and yeah, of people to trust me to do a project like that, to then be like, you know what, never mind, we're going to do something else. I was kind of the last one to agree, but I'm glad I did. And so what we settled on is, what are the stories that are not being told by the media? And also, how can we use theater to make sense of what's happening? Because it's really hard to make sense of everything that's happening, especially when you pull it all together, like the election and like all the wake of the protests and the still the reverberations of the protests, climate change, the higher educational crisis, going to school over Zoom, personal health, dating. Like it's just a really intense time to be alive right now. And so, and for a lot of people, it always has been. It's just the pandemic made things a little bit more evident.
Yeah.
So I was like, I think that kind of became our North Star. It's like, how can we make sense of all of this through theater? And so we are working on a documentary theater play that right now doesn't have a title, although we call it Docutron as a way to honor what it would have been. And we're interviewing frontline workers, we're interviewing folks from a range of professions and different parts of the country about their experience with the pandemic, and then we're kind of stitching those up together into a script. And the hope is to present that sometime in February of next year as part of the season still.
Oh, and that's wonderful. Kind of
where we are.
Mm-hmm. No, yeah. Oh,
yeah. Documentary theater is so exciting, especially in a time like this when everything is in such influx.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
And yeah, it's specifically what you said too, like what's not heard and what's not seen so much on the media. A lot of those stories and a lot of those experiences and voices do need to be heard and need to I don't know about the word cherished in a way. There's another better word for it, but just, yeah, like really heard and really, yeah, just to really make a space where people are understood. So I, best of luck, break a leg. I'm so excited to see it. Yes.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Yeah. Awesome. So now to close this all up with everything that we have talked about throughout this interview, what advice do you have for aspiring artists who are trying to navigate through this time of uncertainty? And how can we start to bring theater back into our lives with the circumstances that we are living in right now?
Yeah, I would say I feel funny giving out advice because, you know, I'm still in school. And so, one of my mentors in undergrad, she's great. Her name is Jodi Baker. And she had this phrase that said, like, I hate it when people say, like, this is not rehearsal, this is the real world. And because she was like, if you don't think rehearsal is the real world, you either need to go to an actual rehearsal or reconsider your notions of reality.
I love that.
It's super sassy. But yeah, I think it's true. And I don't think school isn't the real world. I think school is just its own world with its own kind of demands and things like that. So I'm just going to speak to the things that I'm excited about and the things that I think are interesting, or like maybe things to as you were saying, Sam, cherish, in hopes that any of this makes sense for anybody else, because everybody has different, you know, circumstances. I would say that one of the things that's exciting to me about all of this uncertainty, first of all, is that if there is a group of people that knows how to make things come together under immense pressure, a lot of emotional investment, exhaustion, and very little financial compensation, is theater people. I think we are like primed for crises like this. And I think what's really tricky is that the thing that usually gets us through these, through those productions, the fact that is the fact that we're able to physically do that with each other. And even if we spend like 11 hours, which nobody should, and I never have, but if someone spends like a ton of hours working on something, 8, 9, 10, 11 hours, you get to, you know, walk home with someone and know that you just both put in a ton of work, and you're now you're both going home and you're part of this community. So I think what's hard for us, even though we have all that skill set, is that the probably the most precious thing of our work is precisely the thing we can't do right now. Mm-hmm. But I think if we are able to, for a second, like, you know, cover the sun with one finger, I think we can see what's around it and see, like, we have all these other things that we know how to do, you know? We've known that our bodies and our emotions are part of our work much longer than people who work in other professions. We don't always take care of them because we're humans and et cetera. But we've known that, I firmly believe that deep down people in theater know that working together is better and leads to significantly better outcomes than working by ourselves. And so in that regard, I think my advice is just, like, you know, trust the reasons that you joined, or like re-examine, revisit the reasons you joined theater, like see what things you already know about how to make work to live your life right now, and kind of hold on to those things and value those things. Because just because, you know, academia or even like the financial market doesn't value those skills of collaboration and centering the body and listening to multiple perspectives and thinking through many disciplines together, like that, those are the things that we need right now. And that, one of the reasons that I do theater, and I think it makes a lot of sense to think about crises like this through theater. And another thing that's exciting is that, honestly, and this is an unpopular opinion, I think there's too much theater that gets made just because theater people like theater. Mm-hmm. I think that is a perfectly valid reason to make theater. I'm not here to shame anybody for making theater. I make a bunch of theater. But I think that I think we might have lost a little bit of like what the real purpose or value it is for other people.
Yeah, like the integrity.
Yeah, the integrity, but also like, what is the thing that it really does offer? Like, is it that it is a Shakespeare, or, you know, a play about the Simpsons, like the one I did? Or is it the fact that, like, we don't really get to sit with each other anymore and be quiet without being on our phones?
Yeah.
Is it that watching something live happen in front of you without any idea of how they did it, is that exciting? Or is it the fact that, I don't know, maybe you... Again, like you do something that you normally don't do because of how fast our lives are. And so this, again, long-winded answer. But I think it's a really good time to embrace that uncertainty and be like, why do we make theater? And like, why should we keep making theater? Especially since in this country and in mine, it has upheld so much white supremacy, so many practices that are harmful to many people. Like, what do we want to keep from all of that? Because I think there are great things that we want to keep from that. But I think the young, the scrappy, and the hungry are the people who know what are the good things to keep from theater. But so I would say that. And as far as incorporating it back into our lives, I think it's tied a little bit to like what is the thing that brings you to theater and how you make sense of it. So like, you know, I used to love rehearsal. And like, I always said that rehearsal is the reason I put up with everything else about a production. And so I've been thinking about like, what are ways that I can think of parts of my day as rehearsal, as a space where I am just to try something and see if it sticks, so that I can be a little bit more patient with myself. But, you know, other people do it because they miss, you know, presenting or performing themselves. And I don't know, does that mean you have a different Zoom background? Does that mean you really kind of, you know, perform? Do you put on a show in the all kinds of senses of the word, like through your window for someone out in the street? Like, how can you use the things that you liked or that brought you to theater to connect with the world around you as you can? I think those are the ways, those are what I think are like some of the seeds where theater is going to be, to regrow again. And I guess the last thing I'll say, and again, I realize I'm being long-winded here, is that in some senses, like, it's kind of exciting to me that in a city like Austin, most people don't make a living out of theater, and many theater companies didn't need to pull in revenue to continue to exist. Like, sure, it was a huge hit to have all of those shows canceled. I had my first professional production canceled. It was going to go up in April. Mm-hmm. But I know that, like, as soon as there's a vaccine or as soon as things are safe to go back again, I can regroup at least my little company on the UT Austin campus fairly easily. And so I think that in some ways, like, the smaller companies in cities like Austin that have smaller companies might be more resilient to this crisis than, like, big theaters like the Guthrie or the Woolly Mammoth, which I love those theaters. But I think there's some a real strength that, like, smaller and students like us and like young people like you and I, you all and me, that have a different, that I think we have less of an attachment to doing theater the way that it's always been done. And I'm gonna stop there.
I love what you said about the like taking, like, you really loved like rehearsal, and like, so you like put your mindset into like a rehearsal space for like a non-conventional like activity. I think that's like a really, really interesting way to like get your mindset back into like a sort of a theatrical, or what you loved about theater, but like obviously without like doing the actual theater, because we can't right now. I think that's like incredible advice that I've never thought about.
Mm-hmm. And honing in on what is it that really grounds us to want to do theater, and the reasons behind doing theater, and whether or not, you know, the pre-COVID era theater industry is something that we want to go back to or sort of evolve from.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think, I mean, I don't know what y'all's experience has been in studying or learning theater, but I just don't know that kind of reflection of who we are as artists, or why we want to be artists, is like kind of built in our education. Like, I think there's this whole talk about like who you are as an artist, and like, you know, what is your artistic vision? And for me, it's less about the vision. Like, I don't know that I've set out to say like, this is my vision for what theater wants to be. And it's more like, as I said at the beginning, like, I have a reason why I do it. And if I get other stuff outside of it, that's great. And I have to do a ton of work to get that little thing. But that perspective about collaboration. But I don't know that I'm always encouraged. And this isn't shade to my teachers. I just think, I don't know that they were encouraged either. Yeah. But I feel like that's a key thing.
Totally. Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm taking so many mental notes of everything that you just said right now. Christian, seriously, like, thank you so much for being open with us about the experience of certainty in theater right now, as someone who is also going through it. This is the platform. There needs to be a platform for a lot of these discussions to come about, not just be like, oh yeah, like, it's a very interesting time, we're all gonna get through this. There needs to be a lot of dialogue of how are some of us going through this, how are some of us actually creating work going through this, and what is our mindset right now to keep us doing what we love without the traditional practices that we are so used to.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
I agree. And I honestly, like, one of my little dreams is that, like, you know, I love American theater. I love HowlRound. I think they're great. But I think we need, as you said, more spaces to have these conversations, like y'all's podcast. But, like, what would it look like if we made zines, you know, about theater? Like, why we make theater? Like, more, like, small, like, indie ways of thinking about theater that aren't just all, because otherwise we're all subservient to, again, no shade, I know this is called the Broadway Podcast Network, but we're all, you know, Broadway becomes the center of the theater world, or the Lort theaters become the center, like the goal that we all aspire to. And I think that's fine if that's some people's goals, but what if it isn't everybody's, you know?
Mm-hmm. Totally.
No, yeah.
What a, I, unfortunately, like, we have to wrap up. I would love to talk to you for a, much longer, because I think what you're saying is so interesting, and like, I, like you guys are saying, it's so important to be having these conversations about why we love theater, how we're getting through this time to and connecting with that love of theater while not being able to do it, and reconnecting with, like, sort of like the ground zero of theater. And again, not like the huge, like, Broadway, like, craziness that we're kind of used to. But thank you so much for being here. Absolutely. I thought everything you said was so interesting and valuable. I don't know what else to say.
Thank you all for having me.
Of course. Thank you again. Thank you so much for your time and consideration for this. I hope that you and your loved ones continue to be safe and well. Mm-hmm. Keep us updated on any projects that you have coming up. So excited to see your project that's coming up in February. Again, keep us updated, and best of luck, and break a leg on everything, especially during this time too.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all so much. Yeah, I'll keep an eye out for the episode, and I'm also gonna go back and listen to the rest. I listened to the first one, like Meet the Hosts, but I'm excited to hear the rest of the season.
Love it.
Oh, love thank that. You.
Thank you so much. Take care, Christian.
All right, let's go into Act 3. This is our Q&A / like discussion session. We have two questions today, and then we'll kind of just talk about the topic in general, our experiences with it, and that type of thing. Mm-hmm. So the first question is there any advice you could give on ways to deal with the anxiety of living in this time of such like huge uncertainty? What a question.
What a question, that's for sure. I think reminding ourselves that we're all in the same boat, more or less, with this, that nobody is very sure on anything, and we're all just waiting for something to happen. And just remind ourselves that, like, we are all together trying to figure it out, not just trying to figure out our careers, but just trying to figure out life. I got some really great advice the other day, actually. My good friend, he told me that although at this point in our, you know, young adult lives, we think this is supposed to be, you know, one of our peaks, when it really doesn't have to be.
I have never thought that. Girl, anytime anyone told me, when I was in high school, everyone would be like, oh, college is going to be the best time of your life. I was like, you're lying. I hope that's not the best time of my life. Like, that's that's a really, like, really young age to peak. Like,
yeah. So. Right. We're always striving, you know?
No, yeah, definitely. Oh, sorry. You were...
Go for it.
Okay, awesome. No, yeah, definitely. And also, Christian said it too. It's okay to feel these things. Mm-hmm. I mean... trying to figure things out, like, again, we're young, we're like taking it step by step, and I think that's the most important thing, that we're just trying to take it step by step. And there's so many different forms and ways of doing that too, depending on the person, also depending on the resources and positions that they're in. Again, like, it's valid, it's okay. And honestly, I would question, I don't know if this is going to sound pretty rude, and I apologize if it does, but during this time, I would question if you are not going through mental breakdowns.
Oh,
not
yeah.
gonna lie.
Honestly, I true.
Would, yeah, I would be concerned, but again, everyone handles it in a different way. And actually met up with some mentors this week and got some advice, and they just said, right now, honestly, just know that things are happening. Things are happening one way or another, and we can really learn from that. So to take note, observing can be an amazing source of education right now.
Yeah. And I would say, I think the one thing that helps me to think about, I mean, let's be candid for a second. I'm a very anxious person in general, like on a regular day. So obviously this has definitely like Emily and Samantha said, like this has thrown all of us through for a loop, but like this is anxiety on top of anxiety for me. And so the one thing that like I kind of think about a lot is this is not permanent. And I mean, you could say that in any situation. This is not permanent. COVID aside, pandemic aside, nothing is permanent, nothing is forever. And I mean, maybe not nothing, I don't know, but in the general sense, nothing is permanent, nothing is forever. And so I would say just focus on the right now. Don't think about how long this is going to last. Don't think about how, like, for me, I find it incredibly hard to not be future thinking. I'm always thinking about the future and never focusing on the present. And that's something that I always like have to work on, especially during this time. And so I would say this is so generic, but just try to be present in the current moment, take everything step by step, and know that this isn't forever.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Yeah. No, that's exactly.
It's closed.
There. Yeah, we just solved everyone's anxiety with that one answer.
You're welcome.
Anxiety, I don't know her anymore.
No.
That's it. Thank you for coming. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah.
But all right. Awesome. No, yeah. Shall we move on?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's our last question?
Our last question is, what is something we are looking forward to future theater industry wise?
Oh God, I don't even know. I mean, obviously, going back to Christian's interview, I'm really looking forward to what changes in the theater industry because of this. Like, what innovative ways people, like artists, like ourselves, think of to not only deal with this current moment, but also to like move forward when it's like back to quote unquote normal, when this pandemic has not gone but like calmed down, I guess. I'm just looking forward to seeing what changes, what happens, if there's if there's more like more plays that are more plays and musicals that are of new topics. I think one thing for me that I was really not vibing with in terms of specifically Broadway theater was the fact that everything was being adapted from a movie or a TV show or something. It was like all about remakes and all about adapting things to theater.
We want original work.
Please. And that is something that I have been saying for years, and it just drives me crazy. I understand that, like sure, Mean Girls and like Legally Blonde and whatever else, they're great.
Bops.
But I wish there was more original stuff. Like, I don't want to see Pretty Woman the musical. I love that movie. It's literally one of my favorite movies.
Revivals too. Revivals. So many revivals. Once in this Island revival. Absolutely loved. I could go on for days about it. but just looking at a lot of the shows that were, you know, slated to make, you know, a comeback to Broadway, that were either canceled or just weren't on the set list yet. Like, I love Music Man. It was a great, you know, community show. We don't necessarily need a revival of it.
No. And I in the class that I took with Natasha Davis and one of our future guests, there was one of the producers of, like, co-producers of Mean Girls Broadway came on and was talking about, like, why this is kind of happening. And it's really all about, like, intellectual property and, like, how easy it is to gain access to, like, already their IP. And also to get a fan base that already exists to move to a different medium, because people are already excited about and, like, engaged with this, like, people were obviously very engaged with Mean Girls already, so it was easy to transfer that audience to theater and not have to gain a whole new audience. And I get that, like, I get it, but that's like that just like takes out so much of the artistry for me, at least. I mean, maybe a lot of people love revivals and remakes and readaptations and things like that, but I'm just bored at this point. I'm tired of it.
And I feel like because of that, especially, I mean, I think y'all see this on Twitter, but whenever a revival or just anything that has already been done, specifically in Hollywood too, more than anything in Hollywood from what I've seen on Twitter, comes up or is marketed, everyone's like, again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really? Mm-hmm. We don't want this. The original was great. Don't touch
great.
It. And while like a lot of us are pretty excited for a lot of these remakes, we're really excited for them. That's not what we're asking for right now. And because of that, I'm really excited for and looking forward to in the future of the theater industry, and honestly for the arts industry as a whole, for a lot of the people who are feeling the same ways that we are, to bring in and pitch all of these new ideas that people are coming up with a lot, specifically during this time too. I remember in the beginning of quarantine, there were people being like, it's going to start a new arts renaissance. And, you know, let's see where that goes. Let's see how that happens, right? But, that's something that personally I'm looking forward to. And I can't wait for all of that original work and stories and experiences and needed experiences and stories to be on stage.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, just to your point of like, just going back to like the remixing, I'm sure like whatever, have more of those, like, cause people are excited about them, like you said, Samantha, but there needs to be a balance. And right now, or like before Corona, there wasn't, in my opinion, there wasn't really a balance of like original new work versus remakes and readaptations and things like that. So that's something that I really need. I need it.
Mm-hmm. Something that I've been thinking about a lot this week with the recent announcement of the American Theater Wing's recent announcement of the 74th Annual Tony Awards, the biggest event all year.
Yeah.
You know, in a time that the industry has been engaged in so many conversations about the state of theater and how it can reinvent itself more equitably for the future. I'm also really looking forward to, you know, seeing where that takes us. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about it a lot. I think it would have been incredible to see a reinvention of the Tony's categories. And this might be a hot take on my part, but, you know, sort of seeing why we're so stuck on the binary and moving away from that. And, you know, why, I don't know, reasons why the league didn't choose to combine actors and actresses in the same categories, considering that there are only like what, five of them eligible total. Reflecting that conversation about how, you know, characters, it don't always depend on gender identity and totally. Performance of that. Design categories and, you know, combining things and sort of reinventing the different categories for that, to also just like reflect the current social landscape that we're in.
Yeah, definitely. Like there's so many artists in terms of the Tonys, like categories that are just completely overlooked, and it's disappointing because like, I mean, it's one thing, like, it's the same with, like, any awards show, like the Oscars, the Tonys, the Emmys, whatever, that they don't really matter, but they do.
I mean, I wouldn't mind a Tony.
No, of course not, but, like, it really doesn't, like, I don't know, what am I trying to say? It doesn't, like, define, like, a person's talent or worth in any sort of way, because obviously there are, like, tons of performers and actors and people who haven't been recognized who definitely should or would in different circumstances and different lights and different categories. So I totally agree about the like reinvention of the categories thing. I think it's time.
Absolutely. And I'm really glad that we're also talking about this again. This is a platform for a lot of these ideas and these thoughts and these voices to be heard. So putting that out there and and amplifying this is really needed, especially for when, you know, the world turns back up. But when it turns back up and... Yeah, I'm just very happy that a lot of us are thinking about these things. Wow. And it's not just us too. Right. It's not just us thinking about this and talking about it amongst each other right now. There are so many people having these conversations in their living rooms, in their kitchens, through FaceTime, whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm just very excited for a lot of us.
Yeah.
Really
quickly, I just wanted to talk about like, I just wanted to ask you guys, maybe just to like round it out on the topic again, like what is one, like we asked Christiane this, what is one time that you guys were like so incredibly uncertain about something that you had to like reevaluate a lot of things? And like, what was your thought process? How did you get through that moment?
I really felt it when Christiane talked about having a show in mind for so long and then having the platform and the chance and opportunity to finally do it. But during this time, he felt like it was very important for voices and stories to be heard and to be told. And I really felt that because before COVID, I was in the same position too. I was with an amazing team and an amazing cast, and just overall, like, I was so happy with the fact that for a script that I was holding on for so long and a story that I was holding on for so long, it was finally going to be produced and co-directed and just, you know, all the good things. And then COVID happened and that broke me. Not going to lie. Even to this day, there's a little bit of me that's like, oh, that hurts. Because I found my superheroes in theater. Are you kidding me? A cast full of women being awesome. Like, speechless, honestly, like speechless. There was that. And I had that conversation with myself again this week. And I eventually just talked about it with my mentors. And specifically one of them said, you can find a way to still do this, or there is another show, there's another project that can come in and not necessarily take that place, but still fulfill you in the way that you were excited for that first project that you first had.
Yeah.
And I opened back up my Google Drive for my thesis, for my undergraduate thesis, especially my deliverable. And And I read the script that I had in mind over again, and it sparked. It sparked. And it's a completely different script. It's more towards what my thesis is talking about, but it sparked, and I immediately just started going through it and thinking so many things and trying to plan out everything. But again, like that, I'm still living in uncertainty, but that was a long period of, that was six, almost 7 months of uncertainty of just what's the next thing. Yeah. And eventually it will come into place somehow, some way, someday.
Yeah, I would say along the same lines of, you know, finding that spark again. And like Kristen said about not really seeing any work he was like totally just like in love with, and so like creating his own and being able to finally having the space to do it. I'm currently struggling on finding an acting thesis for myself for the spring for my senior thesis. And that is a current uncertain struggle that I'm trying to figure out this week. I also have my own project I'm doing in a couple weeks of putting up a night of Asian American written theater of scenes and monologues, and that has very much ignited another spark in me and sort of subsided some of that uncertainty about, you know, doing theater. That's my answer.
Cool. For me, I would say, I mean, again, COVID related, because what else is on the mind? Nothing. Basically mine was graduating. I was like, not really sure. I'm so future thinking because of my anxiety. I just like think about the future all the time. And like, obviously it never pans out the way that I plan because life is like that. And I had basically everything sort of generally planned out. And then of course, March happened. I was interning for Zach Theater and I got laid off because, I mean, not to say that they undervalued me and not to say that interns are unimportant, but like I was basically the first to go because like they needed to like salvage people's full-time jobs and not like my part-time internship. And so basically I was like, what the F am I going to do? Because I was planning on basically like maybe living at home for like the summer, like a couple of months, and then like moving into New York City with my friend and just like living my life, getting like a good job in like a theater, like admin situation, and just like living my adult life. And that's like what my fantasy was. And then I was slammed into COVID mode and I was unemployed and I was like, what am I gonna do? And I'm still in that sort of mode. I'm working part-time at a like party store right now, not Party City. It's like a local, you know, support small businesses. But like, I don't know what my next step is. And I think like, for me, what really helps me to like get out of my like crazy anxiety mindset is just to say like, that's okay. Cause right now, like no one knows what's going on.
It's all uncertain.
Yeah. And again, even in regular circumstances, it's okay to be uncertain about basically everything. Like you don't need to have all the answers. And if like, I don't know. It's okay to be uncertain. You should try to learn. And if this is obviously easier said than done, I'm like preaching to the choir, but like, try to sit with the uncertainty and like realize why you feel uncomfortable and try to get more comfortable with it. But yeah, COVID is a thing and
it very much is.
It We're excited sucks. To tackle this all together in this age of uncertainty.
Heck yeah.
No, yeah.
Retweet.
Thank you all so much for listening. Yes. We're looking forward to releasing our next episodes for you over the course of the next few weeks.
Keep our keep a lookout for our like Instagram posts at BPN Interns, and
keep submitting questions.
Yes, exactly. The form is linked in our bio, and have a great life. I don't know why I said it like that, but yeah. I mean it.
But we understand what you meant, Charlotte.
Thank you.
No, right. Definitely, though. Again, we want to hear from you. And again, thank you so much for listening in. Stay tuned for next time.
Bye. Bye, all.
Bye.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.